I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and with me, as always, is Mr. Merrick Larwood. Hello, Merrick.
Hello, David. I understand you're hungover today.
I am a bit hungover today, yeah. But I'll be alright.
Did you go to a disco?
I went to a disco. Did some dancing.
Did you?
No.
When was the last time you danced?
God, that is a good question. I have no idea. It's been a long, long time.
I find now I only dance at weddings.
Yeah?
That happens. Once you get into your late 30s, you only dance at weddings. So I'm probably the uncle just dancing.
I danced at a family ceilidh in 2011, I remember.
I only dance at weddings, I only masturbate at funerals.
Oh, that's a good rule. It's a good rule. Keeps you busy.
Yep, sometimes you need to put a bit of life back into things.
It's a celebration of life, really, isn't it?
And what more could be a celebration of life than talking about films?
Yes, good segue.
An hour and a half to encapsulate a life story.
Yes. Have you seen just such a movie recently?
Sometimes an hour and a half is not enough. Sometimes it is way too long. You've got a mark on your head like Harry Potter.
Yeah, I do, yeah. And when I was younger,
it's actually a proper...
Yeah, it's a proper scar. It's a scar. And I also, when I was younger, I had his shit haircut and glasses as well. But the Harry Potter books hadn't come out, so I only ever got... Oi, Milky Bar Kid. It wasn't worth anything in my
I would have said Milky Scar Kid.
Nice.
It's only the first time I ever noticed it. Must be because it's been quite cold and you're paler than normal.
I've also had a haircut, so it's probably visible.
And how did you get that scar before you move on?
I ran into a door, I think.
What's some sort of dirty protest?
Yeah, it was. I ran into a door and shit myself. And then my mother's love saved my life. She took me to hospital. A Harry Potter reference. I don't think you got it.
Oh, sorry, I'm not really into that.
No, it's all right.
I watched a really good documentary about Tom Felton, who plays Draco Malfoy in Harry Potter.
Oh, yes.
Which is on the BBC, it was on BBC Three, about superfans. And he went and met his superfans, and he met all these people who were obsessed with things. And I have to say, I found it very interesting and quite uplifting.
Uplifting?
He was a very good host.
Oh, that's good. Were his superfans then, by and large, not crazy people? Or...
They were crazy, but he went and met them and he tried to understand why they were crazy and they were just pretty much lonely people.
Yeah.
A lot like I'd be if I didn't have this podcast to do.
who would you be a crazy fan of, do you think? Who are you just sort of, you know, if you were a bit lonelier... And, you know, had been lonelier for a while. Who would you just tip over the edge?
They have to be a fictional. A lot of them is fictional.
Yeah.
They're weird fictional things.
But then they bleed over, don't they? So people who are massive Sherlock Holmes fans just become Cumberbatch fans.
Yeah, they got certain names or something.
Cumberbitches, they call them. I don't like that.
It's not very respectful. I don't think Benedict would like that either.
No, apparently he doesn't really.
I think sports is my thing.
Sports, so yeah. You follow.
If one thing I'm obsessed with, it's the Detroit Lions.
Okay,
but that's waned slightly since I've created the greatest sport of the 21st century, Wolfsball. And I've talked about it before. And the prototype is being made. It's going to cost me £800.
I'm enjoying these updates. Has there been any progress since you last?
Have you seen the documentary I've released?
Yes, I have. It's very good. I would say I think Senna is better. But you know, it's getting
It's a very low rent documentary which you can watch if you go to. Wolfsball.com. But it isn't about sport as you. It's
about film. So you've.
The reason I'm doing this sport thing is that I need something to make me a millionaire after. And basically, comedy's not worked out, so I've got to bloody try something, haven't I?
Yeah. I went and to, sport is the thing.
Well, know. I think we should try and get to the point here, and that's another good segue into thing we're going to talk about.
Shush, buddy.
It's Focus.
Focus. Okay, tell us about Focus.
Focus is a film about a con man. The con man is Will Smith. He runs this sort of... He just does... It feels a bit like an Ocean's 11, but it's more sort of thieving, sort of tricking, a bit like the
Sting. Yeah.
Which is the, probably the greatest.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's not in the same league as the Sting.
Okay.
And he sort of employs an assistant who tries to con him. It's Margot Robbie. I've not really heard of her from before, but she's one of the... She was in Neighbours.
Which one's she in Neighbours?
She's the woman.
The woman in Neighbours. Helen. Helen Daniels.
She's Helen Daniels. She was in Neighbours, and she's... And it's quite phenomenal, the leap from Neighbours to Hollywood superstardom.
There's a lot of them, aren't there?
Well, Guy Pearce being the main one, but a lot of them...
Well, Russell Crowe as well. He was in Neighbours. Holly Valance, of course. She's in all the films.
Well, she is the latest jump from straight from Neighbours into Hollywood superstardom.
Yeah. Actually, I bet after Russell Crowe and Guy Pearce, it's the guy who played Jim in Neighbours is in everything.
Oh, Jim Robinson, yeah.
Yeah.
But the great one is Ben, what's his name, who's in Home and Away as well, who plays evil bad guys in Ben something or other. You remember his name? He's absolutely brilliant. I'll remember it later on.
Okay.
Someone, you've got the internet. I've only got my memory. And as we realised from the Stellaris, that when I reviewed that, is failing fast. Anyway, so Focus is, he's a con man.
Mrs. Neighbours is his assistant.
The one from Neighbours, Margot Robbie, plays his assistant. He's got this sort of con crew, and they go round, and they play. They're basically criminals, but they're really friendly, nice criminals who con people out of money. And they do. It's all leading up to the big trick. So the first bit that there's like a whole group of them. They sort of teach each other how to distract people, or they pick people's pockets.
Right? Is she? Is it the like Ocean's 11 or the Sting where the final trick is on the audience?
Well,
themselves.
Ocean's 11, they're sort of they're doing sort of big cons.
Yeah,
these are just thieves.
just
pretty much they're thieves.
Punching people in the face.
No, they're
and
just
taking
thieves.
Their stuff.
And they all. This is my problem with the film. You have to completely switch off for this film. You need to have a lobotomy. If you're under 14, you might think they're cool. Will Smith seems to become so vanilla in his performances that he's not really performing.
It's odd, isn't it? Because for a while, he could have been, you know, really, really good. Like, he did Ali, which is a very good performance. And he's done other ones as well, but he sort of disappeared.
He's sort of turning into that Tom Cruise. I don't know whether it's because we're so used to them. It looks like they're not acting. But he's almost doing a completely bland character. And she's more interesting than anything in this. The Margot Robbie's more interesting. And there's lots of press about whether Hollywood can accept a sort of black male, white female leading relationship.
Oh.
I read a few things
is
about
that. Is that still a thing?
I don't think it is. I think it's just a publicity thing.
Right.
Because the real thing for me was the fact that I looked at their ages. He's 46 and she's 24.
Okay.
That's the weird thing.
Yeah,
Not the fact that he's black and she's white. He's 22 years older than her.
Yeah. I mean, he's old enough to be her... Yeah, only her father.
No, he could be her grandfather.
He'd have to... No.
Yeah. If he was really...
If he was 11 when he conceived...
Yeah, if he was...
11-year-old father.
Yeah. Just about feasibly possible that he could be a grandfather.
Okay.
If he did it on... As soon as he became...
It's unlikely.
As soon as he became fertile...
Yeah.
Instantly
impregnated
a
lady. Okay, yeah, sure. He could be her grandfather.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've got that out of the way. These are irrelevant questions. The point is, I struggled with the first half of this. I thought, they're basically petty thieves. All these bunch of people who are in this cool gang, and they go to this Super Bowl type event, and they're like, okay, there's going to be loads of people in the crowd. We're going to go and nick stuff out of their pockets and do all these, just some
is that literally the level they're operating
on? And it gets bigger and bigger. They do bigger scams.
Okay. Like nicking out of people's bum bags. And
yeah,
then
they're just nicking people's watches and doing distracting them.
Right.
And they're all like quite good looking and successful people. In reality, if you ever meet thieves, they're horrible, drug addled, violent, nasty.
They've got a the ones I've noticed, they have a twitchiness to them that you can spot them a mile off if you actually see them walk into a shop or something.
If you forget the fact that thieves are horrible scumbags, which I struggle to do, at the end of it, they almost after, there's a few spoilers, if not already, the first bit when they do their Super Bowl thing, they have a big party to celebrate them scamming
stealing
loads of people.
Some wallets.
They have this sort of party where they're all drinking, it's almost like a sophisticated theatre goers party. They're all drinking champagne and doing... It's like a party, like a wedding. Everyone's quite sort of... like it's like a sort of lively wedding of really good-looking 30 and 40-something people. I think if they're all thieves, they'd be nicking stuff out of... You know, and they all operate in this big sort of cartel-type system. That's the idea, where they're all really working together to help each other get the...
They pool everything they've got and share it out.
It's all teamwork, and everyone goes, OK, I'm a thief... I've just nicked all this person's work, but I'll sign up to this profit share scheme.
I want to see what you're describing done properly, where they're incredibly sort of sophisticated guys who just go around beating people up in alleyways and stealing wallets.
So
and go, yeah, we made 48 quid today.
Okay, so Gary, you can, you're going to have £12 there. If we invest that in this scheme here, it's just total bullshit.
Right.
And
Where's it set?
It's set in America...
Like
obviously.
Los Angeles or something.
Well, the Super Bowl place is New Orleans, and the second half is in a different.
Oh, so they're jet setting as well. They fly around to steal wallets.
They're jet setting, sort of cool, well dressed petty thieves who go on to bigger scams. That was my biggest problem with it. It's so preposterous, the idea, that I struggle to believe it, and I don't really like. If you've ever been pickpocketed or have someone nick stuff, you automatically hate thieves.
Yeah.
Or everyone does. But I just thought it was... I mean, it's just... It's nonsense. But after the first half an hour, 40 minutes, it becomes enjoyable nonsense.
Right.
There's a sidekick who's like this funny guy. He's got a big... He looks like a fat Maori guy. Can't remember.
The Rock?
No, can't remember his name. And he sort of comes on, he acts as the funny guy in between Margot Robbie and Will Smith, and he sort of tells jokes to her to make her like him. His jokes are really sexist and all about vaginas and really horrible and really over... Oh, if someone said to you, you think it was really inappropriate, and yet their reactions are... You only hear jokes and things, and people say something really inappropriate, but they're told to react like it's really not... You're so funny. No, he's not. He's really offensive. He's a really offensive perv. Talking about vaginas in front of someone he's only just met.
Is there only one woman in the group as well?
She's the only sort of main female character.
That gets creepy then.
Yeah, so it's...
Do they attempt any sort of...
big tricks?
Well, no, Robin Hood sort of vibe to it, that the people they're robbing from do deserve it kind of thing.
Not really, no.
They don't have, you know, the people they steal the wallets from moments before were snooty to a waiter something. That's usually what they do.
That's not addressed. It's just basically just blanket thefts. Yeah. Which is odd, having people like Will's... No one addresses the fact that they're glamorising petty theft.
They seem to have misunderstood what a central premise of the heist film is, that they're robbing somebody wealthy that, you know, they're definitely going to be a villain. I mean, that's it.
So you have to ignore that, because that ruins instantly that you can only be certain marketing of this film. But it's an enjoyable... It's quite nice to have something that's just a sort of romp... Is it supposed to be a comedy? I think it might be. It didn't make me laugh. Mm. But it's quite upbeat, fast-moving drama. And it's all right. I give it 5 Marics.
Okay.
If you want to go and watch. It's just something that feels in...
That's almost the most damning score you can give something, though, isn't it?
Once I got past it, when I really hated it, it was all right. The budget was 50 million. I can't believe they put 50 million into that script. But apparently it's made 49,659,000 in the USA alone.
Well, so they're going to have to pick a few pockets to break even.
All you need to do is to make... on that point, I shouldn't promote the podcast, but I was listening to a really fascinating set of podcasts on the business of film, which Mark Kermode has done. And some people might think he bangs on a bit and is a bit up his own arse, a bit like me. But it's not all about him. It's interviewing how much profit they need to make on the films, what dictates what's big at the box office.
Yes.
And you know, we bang on, or I talk about how much I hate big Hollywood superhero films. It's because 70%, those are the most interesting facts on it, 70% of the gross income from films is made from markets outside the US, particularly Russia and China now.
Is that right? Because China used to pirate so much that it wasn't a very big market.
There's a huge income for them. And because action films are much easier to translate.
Yes.
That's why, that's leading to this big superhero glut.
Big old flashy pictures.
Yeah, and you can't make, there's no money in art films.
They're the Hollywood version of Mr. Bean.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
But if you want to hear about the business of, because I struggle to understand it, there's quite a few people talking on, there's quite a good few interviews about how, you know, you say it makes 49 million.
Mm.
That's the gross.
Yeah.
The filmmakers aren't getting a half.
Well,
as
I
much
saw
of
a lecture once, only a video of it, I wasn't in attendance, but by Kevin Smith, where he was explaining that you could make a film for 20 million and it could make 60 million and you still don't see a dollar of it because the studio may have just decided, well, we're going to spend $40 million promoting this, and you get no say in that as the filmmaker. And so that means in order to make a profit, they now need to make over 60 million in back. And so you get no control over that whatsoever. And there'll be all sorts of wheeler dealings and tax dodges of just, well, we don't want this film to go into profit. So as long as we spend as much on marketing as we make, then that's fine for our studio kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
there's lots of interesting points about how taxes pay, you know, if the films wouldn't get made if there was tax-free films. And films that say they're British films aren't necessarily British. They're just saying that so they get the tax.
Yes, of course.
Things. Anyway, that's something else to listen to. Once you've listened to all the episodes of Film Fandango.
Yes.
I mean, you've got no other reason to listen to that. So Focus 5, Wakelets on telly.
Okay. Why is it called Focus?
I don't...
Because you really have to, or...
If anything, the person who's written the plot for it had no focus whatsoever.
All right. Well, Focus. Flip a coin and decide if you're going to see it. Have we got some letters?
Yes.
Who is this?
From Australia, mate.
From Australia. It's from Douglas Lunt.
Oh, shit, mate.
Hello. I went to a completely different accent for the beginning of that. Hello, David, Merrick and Buddy. Thanks for the podcast. I enjoy listening to it generally on a Saturday morning when I'm out walking the dog. Thanks also for your recommendation for Primer. I did have my work cut out finding a copy, though, as it isn't available on iTunes in Australia. After a bit of Googling, I ended up buying it from the ERBP film website. I have downloaded it, but haven't finished watching it yet. I'm watching it a bit at a time to really try to get my head around it. Are there any films that you've really wanted to see that you just haven't been able to get a hold of, or that took you ages to source? The other film I would like to see at the moment is Coherence, but this isn't available in Australia on iTunes until May. Regards, Rob Douglas Lunt. I called him Robert. I just made up a name there. Douglas Lunt, Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, Doug, mate.
It can be a thing. Like, we've talked about it more and more recently, I think, in the digital age, where you go, I want to see that film. Where is it?
It's disappeared. I just expect to see it right away now, mate.
Yeah. I mean, I remember for years and years and years, I wanted to track down Mike Leigh's film Naked, because everyone said it was the best one he did.
Oh, and it's a good film,
and
that
it wasn't,
mate,
available anywhere. Anyway, I don't think they ever did a DVD release of it.
Did you go to the video store, mate?
This was in the period when DVDs were on the rise, but video stores were on the decline.
So
the video stores were closing down left, right and centre, and so all we had was Blockbuster, which they've only got 500 copies of the same four films, you know? They don't have a good range.
And when you go in a Blockbuster and you say, can I watch Naked, they think you're some kind of pervert.
And they say, yes, you can go to the Naked room around the back, I'll bring you M&M's.
Yeah.
I eventually won...
Oh, my hands all sticky.
Oh, no.
From the M&M's,
yeah,
mate.
Made it melt in your mouth, not in your hand, my arse. I eventually won the video of Naked off Robin Ince in a raffle at one of his gigs. Oh, and I still have not seen it.
Have you not seen it?
No, because it was on VHS and now I don't have a VCR. But I've now since recorded it on my Sky Plus box. So it's on there waiting for me to watch it now. So I have finally tracked it down, but it's been a long old road.
It is a very good film. And Thingy Thewlis, what's his name?
David Thewlis.
That's, you see him in a lot of stuff now and you think, how did you get famous? That is how he got
famous. That film, isn't it?
He's a phenomenon in that film.
I confuse him sometimes with David Wenham. I think they look quite similar.
I don't know who that is. My biggest problem with my favourite films I've banged on about before, Flight of Dragons, the animation.
Yes.
That wasn't anywhere until it recently got released a couple of years ago on DVD.
Mm.
I watched it and I think you enjoyed it too.
I did enjoy it very much so, yeah. I like the explanation that dragons were basically hot air balloons and so they were releasing fire in order to, do their buoyancy.
Yeah,
that's a fun idea.
It's a very good film. Very good idea. Here's another list. You want to read it because I think I've talked too much.
Okay, yeah, sure.
It's in the voice of Stephen Fry.
Oh, God, that's not an impression I can do.
It's just pretend you've been on TV for every single programme and every single advert, even though, you know, normal actors could get paid for them, but you're going to do them. You're going to carry on doing adverts and getting paid work, even though you're a multi-millionaire and just take a break, Fry.
I can do it as Melchett, probably. That's probably as close as I can get. Oh, God. How do you do... I've no idea what Steve... I'm too hungover for this.
Just do posh. Just do posh, gay posh.
Dear David and Marek, I wanted to write in after your last episode because it was very, very entertaining. They are all entertaining, but your last podcast included your thoughts on the best film from each decade. It was a very concise overview of 50 years of great movies. I would have also mentioned Midnight Run, 1988, because of De Niro showing how he can do comedy drama and is yet another fun film from the 80s. Hearing your comments on films from the past is, for me, one of the great highlights of your conversations. And this has often led to me... But it's turning into Captain Picard. And this has often led to me to various films that I've usually been inclined to overlook. Gross Point Blank and Blue Ruin are two examples of great thrilling films I watched on your recommendation, but I have previously bypassed. I always look forward to hearing further thoughts and recommendations from you both on other categories of films, and always hope this will become a semi-regular feature. To give an example, I watch a fair amount of documentaries. What would your views be on the 5 best/most informative documentaries of the last 2 decades? For me, my list would be these. The House I Live In, Eugene Jarecki, an extremely hard-hitting look at the war on drugs without being naive. Food Inc., the first real look at how our food is produced, a bit dated now, but still good. Senna, a brilliant biopic, even for guys like me who absolutely categorically hate Formula One. The Culture High, the second drug documentary from Adam Scorgi, and focusing on the prohibition of weed. Very watchable despite a US bias. The Act of Killing, real dictators reliving the past. Unforgettable, as Marek has previously commented upon. That's it. I love how you talk about films in an everyday manner, unlike other film podcasts. Keep it up, please. And keep watching the films. Much love, Tim Walker.
That was very good, David.
Thanks. It wasn't Stephen Fry.
I liked whoever it was.
It was as close to Patrick Stewart as I can get.
I want to meet him, whoever that was. He picked out two of my recent favourite ones, Senna.
Act of Killing and Senna. Same for me.
I think they are incredible.
Absolutely incredible films. I don't think I've seen enough documentaries to really pick, you know, the best. But which ones have stood out for me? You know, one that stayed with me, actually, and always sort of pops back into my head every now and again, is Marwyn Cole. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah, we enjoyed that one, didn't we? It was quite a surprise.
Yeah. Real surprise.
Do you want to explain what it was, sir?
Marwyn Cole. Well, it's one of these stories that sort of keeps expanding and expanding as you watch it, and there's more to it than you first thought. But it's about a man who has some kind of emotional problem, you would imagine, but who is recreating or creating a fictional village called Marwyn Cole set during the Second World War in his back garden using Action Man figures.
Mm.
But he tells stories and with them, which he photographs with a Polaroid camera and tells this ongoing narrative that he's got going.
They manage to they capture the essence of him perfectly.
Because it's really about a man. Mm. It's a fascinating film.
I've got a few I can bang through.
Go on then.
It's not a documentary, but it's shot in documentary style. Battle of Algiers, very fascinating.
Okay.
Act of Killing, Senna, brilliant. I really liked they're not really informative, it's more of a drama. The Insider, was it called? With the guy who pretends to be... that's not called The Insider. The Imposter.
The Imposter.
The Imposter, I thought, was a great... You can watch it once. It's a real thrilling documentary. One of the most disturbing ones, Capturing the Freedmans, which is a documentary based on the footage of a family going through...
We talked about it fairly recently, didn't we? Yeah.
It is staggering. So I recommend that one. My favourite, I think I talked about recently as well, one of my favourite ever films... Documentary about two American filmmakers, American movie.
Yeah, we talked about that.
It is hilarious.
It's great.
Scrolling.
You know, one that actually that I don't think it would be in my top five because it was too polemic, but it's done. It seems to have done incredibly good work. Is Blackfish?
I think that's a really good one.
It is really good. It's a bit too polemic for me to truly enjoy it. I feel like the other side of it hasn't been stated enough for it to be a truly great work, but. The impact it's had upon people thinking SeaWorld should be closed down has been absolutely huge.
Yeah. The Square, which came out last year, a documentary about the square in the middle of Egypt, in Cairo, is a great idea. Different political ideologies working together and against each other.
Yeah, that was great.
Really fascinating.
Really good. I really enjoyed, what was it called? Indie Game, the movie, was it called?
That's really good, yeah.
Fantastic.
And that's the story of the guy, the story of the people who were making their own...
Super Meat Boy, and then what was the other one called? I forget. It's a long time ago now.
Anvil.
Anvil, the story of Anvil. Oh, made me cry that.
That is a really uplifting documentary. If you ever feel like giving up... Like you try constantly and you just can never get anywhere and your whole life is just falling through your hands. Watch Anvil.
Watch Anvil, the story of Anvil.
And there's another one.
See just how old you can get without achieving anything and still believing in the dream.
One really nice one is a French film. It's called To Be and To Have, Être et Avoir.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
Which is a documentary and it's about this teacher of this school in rural France. And he's a wonderful man. He teaches these kids, and you follow these. It's set in a primary school with a brilliant teacher, and in another really uplifting, brilliant documentary, Être et Avoir, To Be and To Have. I can't recommend that enough. Just scrolling through all my things that I've voted on IMDb.
Is this where your new list is, since you didn't bring in your
Since I forgot my book, which ruined my end of year thing. I mean, there's quite a few there, isn't there? That you
but
you should watch that.
Sorry, Tim, we haven't structured it in quite the formalised way you suggested. But
The Overnighters was good, that we talked about before, a couple of weeks ago. That's quite an interesting one.
Mm.
Just scrolling down now. I mean, if they're not in my top 50 or 60, they're not worth. They're not worth watching, really. Just filler. Mm.
Well,
you don't get this on podcasts, do you? You don't get this on other podcasts. People making sounds to cover the fact they're scrolling through. A lot of people would look through it before they actually start talking.
Yeah, but that's how real this is. We keep it real, by real. We mean dull.
It is happening
right now
before our eyes. Okay, let's go on to talk about
we'll talk about the next film and then we will leave you. Well, this week I went to see a film called Spring. Doesn't that sound nice? I knew nothing about it except that it was described as a romance horror.
good time for that to be released, though, isn't it?
Is
it? Seasonal-wise.
Is this the season when most romances are horrific?
No, spring.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean. So they're trying to cash in on
the
lucrative spring market.
Because there's a bit in Focus we talked about where they try and get people to do things by suggestion, the power of suggestion putting...
They Derren Brown them.
Derren Brown them. So they thought, well, a lot of people will be talking about spring watch, spring's coming. So you're being Derren Browned without them having to do any of the work.
And that's probably why this film has been such a huge commercial success.
Weapon. What is it about then?
Okay. Oi, what are you barking at?
That was Buddy the
that's
dog.
That's Buddy the dog, hello. Now, the problem with describing this film, and they've probably found this in their marketing as well, is that to tell you what it's about is to spoil the film. It's okay. I'll give you a bit of background. It's about a character called Evan, who is an American. He's played by a guy called Lou Taylor Pucci, who I recognised from something. I think he's in Girls. Anyway,
sounds like a prick, this guy.
He's good. Anyway, but he plays a guy who's, in the opening scene, his mother dies, and he... He's going through a bad time. And he ends up then getting drunk with his best mate and getting into a fight in a bar, and everything's going to shit. And the guy from the bar then ends up driving past his house when he's back there having a drink with his friend and says, "I now know where you live." And it's all getting messy, and he's just in a pit and wants to get out. So he ends up just grabbing his passport. No, he grabs his passport and gets... he asks the woman at the end of the phone, he calls up the airport and goes, "I want to go somewhere, anywhere." And she says, "Well, white people like Italy." So he goes to Italy, and it's just about him and he goes to Italy in this little village and everything, and he gets a job on a farm in order to make ends meet.
He moves there.
Yeah, and he ends up meeting this girl and gets involved with this girl. But she is not all that she first appears.
Got a penis.
Oh, you've spoiled it. No, she does not have one penis.
Two penises? It's bad enough your girlfriend's got a penis. When you've finally got two penises...
I mean, they've got more penis than you.
Does that cost more to operate on?
It does.
Well, it wouldn't be...
You have to pay twice.
You wouldn't be double the price.
It's how they do it with laser eye surgery, isn't it?
So I've got
You pay per eye.
I've got two penises. I want to get them both removed.
You pay per penis.
Surely someone would go...
Cost the same as you and your brother going in together.
No, but you've done half the work anyway.
What do you mean half the work?
Sharpening the knife.
This
is a horror film, then.
It's got supernatural elements. I'll say that, but they are a surprise when they first appear, and it is a very well written thing. But it could, because it's a sort of young romance, it could at all times sort of tumble into being, you know, just "Oh, shut up, you haven't lived yet" stuff.
So no one's got a penis in it.
Well, Evan does. It's heavily implied. You don't see it.
Okay, fine.
It's really heavily implied.
You want to make sure the people watching don't...
Yeah.
...think they're seeing the wrong film.
But the girl in question is played by Nadia Hilke, and she's absolutely fantastic in it.
Okay.
Like, she sells the whole thing.
What's she been in before?
I don't know. I didn't recognise her. I think she's German, actually, but she's playing an Italian... Yeah, she's from Bavaria. She's been in German films. This appears to be her first English movie, but she's absolutely excellent, and it's a surprising thing. I mean, the only thing I think that comes, you know, close to the genre of it is probably American Werewolf in London. You know,
terms
of the tone and the sort of
that sounds great.
The romance is at the heart of it, but it is also sort of funny and weird, and also, but it feels like an indie movie, not even romantic comedy, just a romance film, but then it's got this weird monstery stuff in it.
It sounds great. How many Davids to give an idea?
You know, I think I'd give it 8. I did really enjoy
it.
I did really enjoy it. I do not know why it's called Spring. It's the most boring title. I mean, we basically double-billed boring titled film this week.
Like, Spring Focus.
Spring Focus. I wouldn't go to see either of those.
That is something with, what's his name?
Spring Focus.
Chris Backerman.
Okay, I was going to say John Craven, but yeah.
They'll both be in it.
That era. They sound more like production company names, I think.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening and you want to chip in with what they sound like, how can you write in?
What?
I'm doing the bit of writing.
If you'd like to write in and have your letter read out, then please email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Or you can talk to one another on Facebook, /filmfandango, or tweet us at filmfandango, at Mr. David Reed, or at Marek Larwood. And also we do all of this for free, so if you'd like to throw us a bone here for our continued broadcast of this podcast, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the links from there.
Worth about it, isn't it?
I think that's all for this week. Short, sharp and sweet. I'm sorry I couldn't say more about Spring. I would recommend it for, you know, people who like a romance or a horror thing, but I don't want to spoiler it. So there's not much more I can tell you about it, other than I enjoyed it.
What's the point in doing a bloody film podcast?
Well, we should talk about crap films, we don't mind spoilering.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Alright.
Alright, we'll be back next week.
Keep watching the films.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.